everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gigax, and I am here with friends of ours from Branch 36. It is 36, right? In New York?
Yes, yes, sir.
All right, the Vince Sombrato Branch. And it's folks you guys know because this is now your third time on the podcast. We have Brian Gutierrez and Carlton Pinto, and these are former candidates for office in Branch 36. And the reason I have these guys on here today is because they didn't win their election. And, you know, there's a very good chance, like in Michael's and my re-election, that we won't win. The incumbents have all the advantages. And that's definitely something we're going to talk about today. But we're also going to talk about, if you don't win that election, what do you do? How do you move forward? So first, before we get to that, Carlton, welcome to the show.
It's an honor to be back on here, Alan. Thank you for inviting us again. And just hello to the postal world, to the postal family. Just want to say hello to them. Happy belated Father's Day, all those good stuff. And I just hope that everybody is in good health.
Yeah, yeah. I felt. Thank you very much for that. I felt that it was worth a follow-up to see what you guys have been up to and to see, you know, how you're continuing the fight. On that note, Brian, welcome back on.
I'm glad to be back on, Alan. It's always good to be on here and just be able to talk about what's going on and let everybody know how we're doing. And again, just sort of keeping it real and letting anybody know who's still interested in doing whatever they need to do in their own branches. And just to know that we're still here.
That's still it. That's right.
And it just keeps going. The cycle just keeps going. There's no stopping. Right.
The election is one way to affect change within the branch, within the union, but there are other ways as well. There are other things that need to be done. There are things that can be done in between. Your guys' election is on a 3-year cycle, right?
Yeah.
Correct. Right. And that's the way it is in my branch as well. So in between those 3 years, there is still work to be done. There are still things that need to be done. And so the first thing I want to talk about in that regard is, Brian, you had a bylaw proposal, right?
Well, we actually have five.
Oh my God. Okay. Let's start going through them. Let's talk about some of these changes because I've seen the bylaws from Branch 36 and they look like they were written back when Ben Franklin was still the postmaster. All right. So talk to us a little bit about what you guys are trying to accomplish.
Okay, so we'll go with the main one, and that was to establish virtual meetings.
Yeah. Because as the listeners may recall, your guys' meetings are at like 5 o'clock.
Yes,
they're only at 5 p.m. in person. That's it. That's all we got.
Right. So there's like no way carriers can get to these meetings, and it disenfranchises carriers. So what's the proposal?
So the proposal was to have virtual meetings at 5 p.m.
Okay.
And then to sort of sweeten the pot, because I know what the incumbents really fear is this idea that if you do get virtual meetings, you'll have people come to the meetings that they don't control.
Yeah, exactly. Right? That's exactly right.
That's the fear, right? So God forbid they put a proposal on or somebody else puts a proposal that they don't want. They don't know if they have the votes to vote it down or up or whatever.
Right.
So to sweeten the pot, because again, our agenda as the Time for Change slate is simply to just get people involved in the union. So we said, okay, let's put a bylaw change in there to allow virtual meetings. But if you want voting rights on any proposals, it still has to be in person. You still must be at the meeting in order for your vote to count on any proposed, you know, change or whatever the case is that's at a meeting. So we tried to do it in a way that maybe would allay their fears.
Right, kind of a half measure, your compromise.
Yeah, and okay, so yeah. So that was the one proposal. We did one for upping the shop steward pay.
Yes.
Right.
Which is, again, you know, something that hasn't happened since before I was born.
Right.
Another one that anytime the branch spends more than or plans on spending more than $500 on any given transaction, they need to get membership approval from the membership.
You know, that's one that it's crazy that that's not already in place. And so I presume that you're getting pushback from your branch officers on that. What's their argument in the other direction?
Well, you know what? We're not even going to get to the other two. We'll cut to the chase. So
yep.
there wasn't really much of an argument at all. They just claimed that all of our bylaw proposals,
mm-hmm.
In my branch, you need to get 30 signatures from members in good standing.
Okay.
To sign off saying that they approve of this bylaw proposal. And you have to do that for each proposal.
Okay, so that's pretty straightforward. That. Like in your branch, in your station, for example, how many carriers are in your station?
About 50, 55.
Okay, so 30 carriers it's definitely achievable.
Right. Oh yeah, it's not a high burden. So that is pretty cool.
Right.
So we did that, and they didn't even, basically address any of our changes. The president, the executive vice president, basically said that the signature pages that were submitted with these bylaw changes were eerily similar to signature pages that were submitted three years ago. For other bylaw changes. So they just said it was invalid. And they didn't even bother taking it to a vote or anything, and they just invalidated them, saying that they were out of order, and that was it.
Oh my god! So, I mean, it's a page full of signatures. Of course, it's going to look like another page full of signatures because they are essentially the same thing. So, what's the accusation that you just photocopied previous petitions?
Basically,
pretty much, it's good because our base is the same, right?
So we're gonna, of course, a lot of the same people
have a lot of same signatures from the last time to this time.
All right, now I'm gonna ask you the tough question, Brian. And you, are those a bunch of fake signatures?
No, they're not.
No, I didn't think so.
That was a really hard question.
It has to be asked. So, this is such a great example of the abuse of that position, the abuse of power by the people on the executive board, because now they make their ruling. And if you want to fight it, you have a couple of places you can go. You have to appeal it if you want to fight it, right? Because what they say stands, they've made their ruling. And so now you have Article 11. So you can appeal the decision of this vice president to the president of the branch. Well, how do you think that's going to go?
Exactly.
Right. So then if the president backs up his vice president, which of course he's going to do, now you use Article 11, you can appeal that decision to the branch as a whole at the next meeting. But of course, that meeting is at 5:00 and regular carriers can't show up. And so it's just the executive board and their cronies.
Well, in our bylaw, I believe you can appeal it at the same meeting to the membership.
Well, yeah, but exactly. But it's at the meeting. Right. It's that's the point. It's a meeting that's at 5:00 and it's when other people, can't show up, that you could barely show up. How do you even get there at 5:00?
I don't. I haven't gotten to a meeting in quite a while. I show up sporadically because, like I said, it's either you have to ask to leave early or take the day off.
Yeah.
And that's completely unreasonable burden.
It's undemocratic. Every month. Yeah. Yeah.
It is. It's very hard, especially since both of us had route adjustments.
Right.
So our assignments are much longer now.
Right.
My begin tour is at 9:00.
Oh my God. So you don't even get off work until 5:30.
I won't even get off work till 5:30. And it takes, for me, from where I'm at, and people are much farther away from me, it takes about 45 minutes to get to the meeting from where I'm at if you take local, public transportation.
Right, of course.
Or even if you drive, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
But it takes about 45 minutes. So
it's physically impossible to get to the meeting.
Yeah.
Right.
There's really no... I mean, the blatant disregard for the ability of members to come to meetings...
Yep.
It's appalling, to be quite honest.
Right. At this point, it's intentional. Like, they know people can't get to the meeting.
There's no other way to interpret it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Okay, so to get back to this abuse of position, so that burden of having to do an Article 11 appeal to the branch meeting, it's almost impossible for you to get there and argue your side at the branch meeting. And so you're screwed there. So now what you would have to do is appeal the branch's decision, which is just the executive board and their cronies, to the National Committee on Appeals, which is a process that can take months. And in the meantime, the status quo prevails. And you're just left hanging, waiting for this appeal to come through, at which point you can start the process all over again. And this is how the people on that executive board, the people who are already in that position, maintain that stranglehold. And frankly, it's unethical, it's undemocratic, and it is antithetical to what we're trying to accomplish as a union. And this is what you're up against.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so that was the one position. I presume this was stated about all the petitions that you brought forward for your bylaw changes?
Oh, yeah. It was stated for each one.
Of course. Right.
Mind you, 3 years ago, we only submitted 3 bylaw changes.
Right.
This time we submitted 5. So even if you wanted to argue.
Yeah. This is so phenomenally frustrating. And it is an abuse of that power, the power of the gavel that they have. So what now? What do you do? Are you filing appeals? How are you handling? I mean, there's only so much time. There's only so many appeals you can file. What are you doing?
So, for these, for the way they invalidated our bylaw proposals, there was an appeal made by Mr. John Mooney.
Right on.
Who was a part of our slate. The timeline for the branch's response to his appeal has already passed.
Right.
And we haven't, as far as we know, he hasn't received the response since, right. So we don't know what the status is at the moment, but we're at that point where the branch should have already responded.
Right.
To the appeal.
Yeah, so then you're entitled to see the branch's response.
Alan, I just want to say, Alan, yep. Remember, our president is on the national team.
Right, he's a trustee. Yeah.
He's the trustee. Yeah. He's the trustee, correct.
Right. Yeah, so luckily the Committee on Appeals is James Henry, who is largely regarded as having impeccable integrity, and who's the treasurer? Nicole Ryan, and then I forget who the third person is on the Committee on Appeals.
Yeah,
but at least you've got a fighting chance with these people. Larry something, I think it is. I mean, we've had a few of our arguments go up now to the National Committee on Appeals, and we've been completely successful. We've won every time. But, dude, you talk about that abuse of position. You know, when we were appealing our election, the branch spoke. The branch made their decision that, yes, we're going to rerun the election, and people on the executive board opposed the branch's decision. So they sent their appeal up to National, and then the branch gets to respond and explain, you know, why it thinks that the appeal should fail.
And yeah, so, I heard your podcast.
Oh, yeah. So my branch president says, oh, well, I'll write the branch's response. And then he totally undermined the branch's position, again, completely abusing his authority. Luckily, the folks at the Committee on Appeals ruled what he wrote out of order. I mean, dude, out of order is like the kindest thing you can say about what that dude tried to do. And you know we won in our day in court. Yeah,
that's one of the disappointments that I feel is part, again, even with, I hate to say it, but even with somebody like James Henry on the Committee of Appeals, the fact that he has to be so politically sort of soft on that, it's like why these mother effers did something that was completely ridiculous. Called them out on it in your decision.
Right. It feels like there should be a sanction in addition to
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. What exactly is the incentive for them not to try again?
That is exactly correct. What, yep. 100%.
We want to argue all the time that management post office management has to have, what do you call it?
Disincentive.
Yeah, you know,
right.
they
for keep having the contract
up the monetary award for breaking the contract. Right. Otherwise, why would they stop breaking the contract unless there's some sort of, cascading, penalty.
Yeah, escalating
that keeps
remedy,
going.
Yep.
So it's like if you, again, it's nice that you told us that we're right and they're wrong, but what lesson did they learn beyond that?
That's because exactly right.
If they do it again, what are you going to do? Tell them stop being wrong, stop doing the wrong thing, or what?
That's exactly
What's
right. And in the meantime,
if you keep doing the wrong thing, absolutely nothing.
Yeah. And in the meantime, every everything that you bring up gets delayed by months and months going through this process, and they get to keep the status quo, and it completely undermines the democratic nature of our union.
Totally agree with you. You know, it feels very, very hard. It feels tough. It feels sometimes, let's be honest, it gets a little bit demoralizing when you have to go through this stuff. But you just kind of, you know, after like a week or two, you sort of get over it and you just say, all right, well, what's the alternative? To do nothing?
Like, yeah. I feel like within my own branch, the executives are finally starting to get tired of losing all the time. And they're starting to realize like, oh, somebody is going to keep filing these appeals and maybe it'll get that way. But your good old boy, your president is so much more entrenched in that system than we are out here in my smaller, you know, far removed branch. And your task is an impossible task.
Yeah, I don't know how long your branch has been doing the sort of rolling over of people being appointed to their positions or whatever.
But I don't know either, because Michael and I are the first ones to stand up to it.
In our branch, yeah, exactly. In our branch, it's been over half a century.
Basically since Sombrato stepped down?
Yeah.
I would think so. I remember John Mooney said something. It's been about 50 something years prior to 2022 when we made that first
challenge,
first run. It was 54 years of just constant appointments. Okay, right. Well, you know what? We're just this is the person taking over. This is the person taking over.
Correct.
I mean, at the end of the day, when you have such an entrenched system, it's gonna be a while to
turn it around.
To even try to dismantle it enough, you know, to try and just win, you know, even just one position or whatever the case may be. But the way I'm seeing it is this: these last two elections that have gone on, I'm sort of getting a little bit, I hate to say it, a little bit more realistic about what's going on here.
Sure.
So the idea now, this is just my personal opinion, is to continue to create a base that is separate from the incumbent space, which I think we've done a good job of sort of creating a stabilized base for ourselves, and then just keep plugging along until the culture changes enough where, you know, it gets to the point where we're getting through to more and more people. And I think I've realized, at least for me, even though I hope, you know, we take over sooner, I think this is going to be a little bit of a longer process than we first envisioned it was going to be.
Well, you got to think eventually your president is either going to retire or die. You know?
Yeah, but then again, but the people that are there, you know,
yeah,
again,
that's right.
It's the same people. They've been there long enough now,
right?
So it's still sort of the same problem. I don't even think, to be honest, it's the president that's the most popular on the top five. I think it's the other people are underneath him that help him stay in.
Yeah, like Joe Ramos, the retiree. Power.
A lot of people don't like the president himself, you know what I mean? So
right.
So even if he leaves, doesn't really do much for us. So I just think it's plugging along. And then, again, we're not in it for ourselves. If it comes to it, it has to be where, you know, hopefully we get more younger blood to join in, come on our side, and then we try to establish a path where if we can't succeed, then but we've already paved the road for someone else who's coming after us to succeed.
Yes, yeah, seeing so, that you can propose these changes, at least people now know it's possible. You know, that there is at least a path. The path is difficult, but you are blazing a path. So, Carlton, you've been a little quiet over there. So,
No,
that's fine.
Sharing the stage.
Yeah, I love hearing, you know, Brian's my go-to guy for this. But what about, you know, like within your station, what's the vibe on the workroom floor? What do people feel? Because they can't go to the meeting and express this frustration. They can't get their views heard. So what's going on the workroom floor?
They're not happy. Right. You know, one word, they're just upset. Even when the union came the last time doing the, you know, doing the election run or during the contract, they came out there. They wanted to speak to them. And when they started asking questions, it's like, let's go. They're getting frustrated. They tired of not seeing them. Some people don't even know when they come in there, who's the president, who's the vice president. They don't know. They don't know right. who the top five is. To stay around, introduce yourself. We should be able to work together.
Of course.
Even, okay, let's say, okay, Brian and I and the rest of the team, we lost. You should be able to sit down and just have a resolution, say, hey, here's some of the ideas that we saw that we like from you. Maybe we could implement it to make this branch more stronger, more unity. You talk about we're there for your brothers and sisters, but then one right after the election, you're back to your division again.
Right.
Again, Brian and I and Tyree, we're not allowed to teach. Why would you let some of your best teachers that help the ones that come in? Now they want to have a mentoring thing coming in.
Right. What are the chances they're going to let you? Right.
Well, they didn't let me do it.
Right.
But that's okay. I'm not going to beg. I'm not going to kiss.
Right.
But again, we could do things because, again, who's really getting hurt? Our membership. The body's getting hurt when you're saying, you know what? We don't want to do that. We don't want to do that. We're just going to do this and do what the good old boys doing. Since you're not the good old boys, you roll B. We're not going to take those things.
Yeah.
Stop stewards should get an increase.
Of course.
They're the front line in the military. They're the ones that got to get all the information and all this stuff before it goes to the next level. Why wouldn't you want to pay them some more money?
Right.
Why not? After all these years, why not?
Well,
you live in New York where the cost of living is going up.
Let's talk about that because the branch finances are opaque, to say the least, and it appears that your guys' branch finances have been going in the wrong direction. So what's the story there? You know, what's going on with the finances in Branch 36?
You want to tackle that one?
Oh, yeah, go for it, Carlton.
I would say but we've seen a lot of things that eye-openers for us.
Mm-hmm.
We see that's not right. Oh, well, the political way of saying it. The question, just like, you know, things should be about, I mean, it's rounding up to about $2 million, and now it's down to what, about 1.2, Brian?
Yeah, that's what Mooney reported the last time.
Yeah, wow. So we've seen a lot of things that we asked before. As members, can we see the books? He right. said, what? We're not going to allow you to go fishing. What's the problem with that? If we're members and we're paying our dues,
yeah, it's
why
your
we can't
money.
See what's going on? If everything right, it's our money.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we just want to see if it's in good standing. That's all. We're not here to try to give any trouble, but we just want to make sure it is good. And you're telling us that we're not going to allow you to go fishing.
Right. It's not fishing. There is an inbuilt right for you to see how your money is being spent.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I wanted to go back to the.
Yeah, go for it.
To the station vibes.
Okay.
The our district is going through a bunch of our branch is going through a bunch of CNIs mm-hmm. at the moment.
What is CNI?
The route adjustments.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Accountant inspections.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
It's when they do. Yeah. It's when they. So, you know, again, not throwing any accusations out there, but it's very coincidental that on the stations that Carlton and I are in, there's no like quote unquote negotiation between the branch and management as far as how many routes are being lost. But when you see other stations that are going through it, they've been very selective about which stations they do make deals with management about. And, it, you know, obviously when you make a deal, it's always less than what management is proposing to take out.
Right.
And so, it's a little bit coincidental that our stations, it's just a full-blown CNI, no negotiation, whatever management says is going to get cut, gets cut. Obviously, we file the grievances or whatever the case, but at the end of the day, the branch seems to be selectively choosing which stations get a deal and which stations don't.
Can I piggyback on something on that, Brian? Because
sure.
That was my video that got cut during campaign when I got the information because the branch president was the one that let us know that, hey, This week we're going to Hellgate, which is Brian's station.
Right.
Next week we're going to Pinto stations, that's Planetarium. He knew the station that they were going to. He knew.
Mm-hmm.
He came to my station and gave them some inspection sheets. So he's telling my state, he's on video saying that, oh, there's this guy running against me is not letting me know that there's an inspection going on there. He has a talk with Lorraine Cassiano, who's the DM.
The district
and
manager.
I heard, right. I lost 12 assignments. So when this team is going there, they're looking to save, they said that they was looking to save $1 million. They did that.
Right. Yeah. And if you listen to From A to Arbitration, all this stuff should be documented. It should be grieved. And
right.
The union should be fighting to get all those routes back. Yep.
They're not even part of it. They're not even joint. All the years I've been there, they've been a joint agreement where they've been there with management when they're going in. This is the first time I see that the union's not there with management, allow management to do whatever they want to do. And they told them that, hey, we're looking to implement these amount of assignments. What you want to do? So he's telling them that, hey, Brian and I is not reaching out to him. So we're not reaching out to him. You're going to make them suffer. You know what's going on before we know.
Right.
We the last in line to find out what's going on. So you could have easy well not have us lose 12 assignments.
Right.
We went from 47 assignments to 35 assignments. Why?
Yeah. And if the carriers want to complain about it, good luck showing up at the meeting and asking these questions.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And good luck with that.
Guys. So to backtrack again to another topic, I've pulled up my copy of the NALC Constitution for the government of subordinate and federal branches. And Article 6, Section 4 talks about the financial secretary. And it says, it reads, quote, they shall keep an account of all properties, investments, and funds of the branch, which at all times shall be open for inspection. And
read it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's madness that these basic rights, having a voice, having a say in how your money is spent, that all of these things are being denied by people who are supposed to be representing the union. You know, we expect this crap out of management, but we should hold ourselves to a better standard. And in many cases, our own officers are behaving worse than what we would tolerate from management.
Yeah, I agree. And then when if you hear them, you know, they'll go out and or they'll go to a meeting when they have a meeting, they'll say to their own people, "Oh, we're lying."
Right.
That we never asked to see the books. If they ever want to see the books, we're open book. They can just come and ask us whenever they want. And that's
great. Let's do it. Oh, we just lost Brian. Carlton, you still hear me?
I'm still
all
here.
All right, cool. Yeah, so that's exactly right. You know, we go through the same problem here in my branch that, like, they use our state newsletter to talk about how people with podcasts are just being divisive. Meanwhile, the only thing we ask them to do is the stuff that's actually in the bylaws.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's all we ask for.
Yep.
That's all we ask for. And then we look like we're the bad guys because we open up a can of worms. But all we want you to do is follow the contract.
That's it.
We're brave enough to say, Doug, and there's a lot of people in the meeting mm-hmm. that agree with us, but they don't want to say nothing because they're afraid they might lose their benefits. So we're the bad guys by saying something.
Yep. Yeah, we have people come to us on the side and say, like, you know, I really agree with you guys. I wanted to vote with you.
Correct.
But they'll openly say that they're afraid of retaliation. And you and I being people who have been removed from our teaching positions, you know that that's a valid fear.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, for them to go to HR and tell HR now allow us to do certain things, and HR saying that, you know what, we don't want problems with them, so we're just going to just let you go. You become a casualty.
Yeah.
It's hurting the system post office. That's why I call it politics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so speaking of casualties, I hate to turn to a darker subject, but Carlton, I think it really needs to be talked about. Talk about your experience with your union brother who died. I know we've talked about him before, and what you've been going through with their family, and go ahead and speak on that.
First of all, I just want to send my love out to Ray Hodges' family, to his mother, to LaToya, to his two beautiful kids, and to his cousins, his family.
Sorry, guys.
That's all right. Carlton's gone.
This has been it's been rough with what's been going on and how we be treated as a postal family. To see a young man, I had the opportunity to meet him in the academy and to see his young life, 34 years old, gone. My thing is, I wish that the post office as a whole could do more when we lose a loved one. Mm-hmm. We all need to show up there and do what we need to do. Congress is not even doing enough for us on something like this. This hurt.
Yeah.
Because Bryan Station had robberies in there, and not to see the leadership show up
right
through the process. I've been on the phone with the family. I've been with them when they was crying. I've been there during the court case. You know, the judge was like, hey, anybody who makes any outbursts get thrown out. I've been out there calming down family members that's emotional because it hurts.
Right.
It hurts to lose a key member of the family that plays such a strong role is no longer there. And the support is not there from the OGI, from all departments. So we have to do, we said up to 25 years, but this person got only 15 years.
Wow.
With 5 years supervision. So right. Basically,
how much of that are they going to serve?
9 years.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And how active of a role did federal prosecutors and investigators take in this case?
Not much. And I just want to give a shout out to a grilled Ron Speakerman. Thank you so much. What he's been doing for the family. He's been helping so much through the legal problem. Make sure the paperwork is done for this man. He didn't have to. And sometimes it has to be somebody outside the circle that's coming in. Don Cruz is, you know, there's a few other guys I don't remember, but just thank you for what you've been doing for the family.
Yeah, Ron Speakman's a hustler. He's a fighter.
Yes.
Yep.
He came down. He came down to the last trial. He came down, you know?
Right.
And we have to see the things that people are sacrificing. His time from his family, he doesn't live in New York, to come down and just to give the support. The prosecution team, when you don't have money, you don't get much because they already made their deal.
Right.
So it's with the other. So it's like, okay, this is what we're going to give, because originally they wanted to give him 7 years.
Wow.
7 years.
Yeah. And this is, you know, despite, like, the union has resources. The union has the ear of people who are in the right places, at least hypothetically. And you see Brian Renfro talking at these meetings and rallies, the enough is enough, that at the highest levels, we need federal support. Well, where was it? Where was the push
for
that?
It went quiet.
Yeah, exactly.
It went quiet. I didn't even see they put up, the family was there. They didn't put up a video of the family or just put up the court date that, right, hey, come on out and support this brother. One of ours been murdered. He was in uniform.
Right.
Even though they didn't look at it on a federal level, he was in uniform. That could have been any one of us.
Right.
Forget the politics. Forget about all the other things. This is one of us that could happen to.
Yeah.
We live in a crazy world. And not to say, let's get behind this.
Yeah.
It disappoint me.
I hear you. Yeah, that's right.
I shouldn't have the access to the family. It should have been the leadership.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's crazy that this fell to you to handle these things. Okay.
Yeah.
So that pretty much covers the things that I wanted to talk to you guys about. You know, obviously I share your frustration, you share my frustration, and it's not just us. One of the things that I've gained from having classes in mail is getting to meet folks like you who share that struggle. But I got to tell you guys, I hear this from people all around the country. You know, it's not unique to New York. It's not unique to Las Vegas. It's not unique in Colorado and all these other places. I will say that there are degrees and some places are more corrupt than others, but there is this systemic problem. And with voices like yours, and with the podcast and other outlets like social media, carriers are getting more informed and they're getting more empowered. And I would encourage you guys, keep doing what you're doing. It, you know, I know as well as anybody that sometimes it feels thankless and useless, but people see what you're doing. Even from this conversation, there will be people in other parts of the country who say, like, yeah, I can put forward a bylaw change, and yeah, I can do an Article 11 appeal, and I can talk to that person who was the victim of violent crime, and the things that you guys are doing that are really having a positive impact in the long term. So thank you guys for that effort.
Yeah, I have to say that from a veteran who retired. He said the hardest thing is to do is get out of bed. Just show up. And that's what we do, Alan. Just show up.
Yeah, dude, that's the truth. And that's something that any carrier can relate to. Like, dude, sometimes you pull up to a parking loop and the hardest thing is just getting out of the truck, you know, to go start that next section or whatever it is. Or, yeah, getting up, you get that alarm in the morning. Yeah, just doing it. That's the truth.
Because we love our jobs. Right. We love our job, and we wanted to be around for the next generation, you know, and we just wanted to see better. When we came into the job, it was a beautiful job. I mean, the things we complaining about back then is totally different what we see now.
Right. Oh, yeah.
For us, the union was much stronger. You know, we was, you know, underneath, we had a bigger brother. I had a bigger brother that was teaching us the role.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see that now. Yeah. You know, working with the CCAs, they quitting rate is so high.
Right. Yeah. In New York, do you guys still hire CCAs or is it straight to career?
No CCAs.
That's madness. With what the cost of living is there, I don't know how you could hire anybody.
Yeah. We still. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then management will crap on them and make them want to quit when I used to manage a Little Caesar's Pizza, we paid minimum wage. And my thinking on it was like, well, there's nowhere they can go and get paid less than we're paying them. The least I can do is treat them with basic dignity.
Mm-hmm.
Post office doesn't seem to see it that way.
No. At least at my station, I think maybe Bryan Station, you know, the CCAs get to work 6 days out of the week or five and they get overtime. But some of the lower Manhattan stations, those business stations, they're not getting the hours like that. So, I mean, again, they need to. And when you're PTF, when you move to PTF after 2 years, you're not getting paid for the holiday.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The struggle is long.
Yes.
Yep. All right. I think that covers everything. Carlton, any final thought that you want to send us away with, or Brian, or both? We'll start with Carlton.
Never give up what you call to be assigned to. You have to keep fighting the good fight. As Alan, Brian, myself, and the rest of them, don't give it up. Even though if they blacklist and you believe in something, continue to, because everything has a beginning and an end.
Yep.
And I believe that one day we're going to see the change start happening. So don't give up in something that I believe, even though the labor is few, even though you might be the only footstep, later on, there will be many footsteps and thanking us for paving the world, the road.
That's it. All right. Before we get to Brian, I'm going to add on to that. You know, Kimitra Lewis, president down in Dallas, and she's now candidate for national vice president. And she talks about her story, how she was blackballed in the beginning when she started trying to run for office. And they totally iced her out of the union generally. And she just kept plugging away and got to the position that she's in now. Same with Rob Cozier, who I had on just a week or two ago in Milwaukee. That he got iced out and got gate kept and couldn't get the training he needed. And you keep plugging and eventually you get there, or you quit, one or the other.
Right. Yeah.
One or the other.
Yeah.
One or the other.
All right, Brian, take us out.
I mean, there's really not much more to say than what you guys said. You know, you just got to keep, you know, if you believe in the cause, if you believe in a good union, if you believe in the best interest for the carriers, if you're that type of person and you have that, like I said, I've said this before, if you have that itch when you go to work and you see that management's treating somebody in a way and it makes you feel like, what the F is going on here? You need to light that spark that's within you and try to do something within the union and go from there. It's really just that one small step to get involved, and then you just do the best you can for as long as you can.
Agreed.
And if you can make real change, that's great. And if you could only make change for those that are around you, that's still people who have benefited from your fighting for them than they than would have been benefited if you did not fight for them.
100%.
So at the end of the day, you just fight for who you can, when you can, if you and if you can go farther, then go farther. But just don't stop. You know, it's one of those things. This is one of those things that I haven't been a national officer or a local, you know, officer in almost 25 years. I'll be okay if that doesn't happen for another 25 years. I mean, it's really not the end game. It's about doing what you believe and just keep going until, like you, Alan said, either you know you win or you retire.
Right.
You
know what I'm saying? Exactly.
It's one of the, but you don't stop. You don't stop the path. You keep on the path. Don't let anything stop you from it. It's really because again, the alternative is you do nothing.
That's right.
And that's almost pointless. And if you do take that path, then please shut your effing mouth and don't complain about anything.
All right. Okay? I think that's the perfect place to leave it.
All right.
Guys, thank you so much for coming on, man. I love
Alan.
Being on the same side as you guys, and you always have my support, and I'm always happy to lend the voice of Classes of Mail to you guys. So thank you again for coming on. Thank you to Branch 36 for having great guys like you in it. And for Brian Gutierrez, for Carlton Pinto, I'm Alan Gigax. We will catch you all next time.